Thank you. This week, Dick Jacobson came into the office and told me a funny story, and I thought, you know, I'm going to use this. It might not have anything to do with the sermon, but I just have to tell it, because we just need to laugh. But he told me a time when they would have the milk delivered to the house, and one day the milkman left cottage cheese. And then Dick and Karen were puzzled by that, because, you know, why did he leave cottage cheese? We didn't order cottage cheese. And so the milkman came back the next week, and Karen says, how come you left cottage cheese last week? We never order cottage cheese. Well, I heard you say leave the cheese, so I left it. Well, she said, who said that? Well, it came from the other room. Well, the only one in the other room was Pablo, their parrot, who said, leave the cheese, leave the cheese. Well, like I said, it has nothing to do with the message, but we just need to laugh because we're going to look at Ecclesiastes today. But maybe it fits, because Ecclesiastes is a very puzzling book about why things happen in life. And it doesn't sound like the real voice of God when you read it. It's like, what is this doing in the Bible? I don't think he said this. Did he really say this? Ecclesiastes says many things that we don't say because we're Christians and we don't talk like this, but we might think about it from time to time. Because life seems pretty unfair some days, pretty uneven, pretty mixed up, doesn't it? So Ecclesiastes is a true book about the troubles of life. It lays it all out, but in it, there is the key to happiness. It's there. And let's be honest. These are pretty unhappy times. They can't keep antidepressants on the shelf. We're running out. And whatever we've been through the last 5-6 months, and who knows when it's going to end, it's been really hard on people. And as a pastor, I'm quite concerned about that. All of the fallout. May the Lord help us get through this. So the title of this series in Ecclesiastes is Happiness Under the Sun. Maybe you might want to put a question mark after that. So let's look at the theme. The theme is right here in the first three verses. These are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? That's the theme. And that's what we're going to look at today. Let's close in prayer. No. No, let's keep going. It'll get worse before it gets better. So let me introduce this book. The teacher is King Solomon in his old age. Solomon had it all. He did it all. He knew it all. And in many ways, he lost it all, too. Solomon made more mistakes than all of us put together. And he lived to tell about it. And we should listen to what he says. The date is 935 B.C. We have early fragments of Ecclesiastes going back 100 years, 200 years before Christ, pieces of chapters, 5-6 chapters of Ecclesiastes, showing that the book is old. The word in the book is hebel. That's that Hebrew word for mist, vapor, breath. Everything is mist. Everything is mist. Our Bibles, we translate it as meaningless or vanities. But it also has the idea of puzzling. Everything is puzzling. It's like we're in the fog. Or everything is temporary, like the morning mist. It's here and it's gone. And it's just short. And what's the meaning of it? Now, the views vary on this book. Some say it's atheistic, too cynical, even filled with falsehood. Some say it's partly atheistic. Some editor got a hold of this and put some nice things in it here and there so that it wouldn't all be depressing. But my view is that it's a theistic book. It's a book inspired by God telling us about happiness from God and how miserable we are without Him. Now let me explain theism, the worldview of theism. A theist believes that all of reality is made up of two things. It's made up of nature and supernature. It's made up of matter and mind. It's made up of material and the spiritual. There's the creation and the creator. Two stories, get it? That's theism. All of reality has these two parts, an upper story and a lower story. And so that's what I mean by theism. And I think that Ecclesiastes is very philosophical in that it shows us the futility of living life just here on the lower level alone and forgetting the balcony. Now take this room we're in. We've got a lower level and a balcony. And a theist believes that's the way reality is. There's the upper story and the lower story. There's nature, supernature. There's the creator, there's the creation. They're both real. One you can see, you live in. One you can't see, you know it's there. It's just as real. But this book is written as if there was no balcony. Where would we find meaning, happiness, if all there was life under the sun? That's the term that you see over and over in the book. Under the sun, that's this. As if all there was the natural world, there was no supernatural, no God, no God-given absolutes, no creator, no God-given rights, no God-given meaning or happiness. So the purpose of the book is there meaning and happiness under the sun? And as we're going to see in the book, trying to live without God, denying God's gifts, is exactly what leads to unhappiness and loss of meaning in life. If this is all there is, where are you going to find meaning and happiness? It might just be a mist, and that's it. It's gone. But yet, the atheists in our society, they continue to march on and try to find meaning in life. Take Lawrence Krauss. He wrote the book, Universe from Nothing. He said, you couldn't be here if the stars hadn't exploded, because the elements, the carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, iron, all the things that matter for evolution, where did that come from? That's what I'm thinking there. Weren't created at the beginning of time. They were created in the nuclear furnace of stars. So forget Jesus. The stars died so you could be here today. Happiness. I'm stardust. He might need a little Jesus now. They found out he was friends with a fellow named Jeffrey Epstein, and he lost his job. I wonder what the meaning is now. And then there's Richard Dawkins, the real happy atheist, who wrote River Out of Eden, The Darwinian View of Life. In a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason to it, nor any justice. It's so funny to hear atheists screaming justice. Why? The universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference. Is there meaning and happiness under the sun? Dawkins says no. So good luck with that. Of course, if he believes this, then his words are meaningless too. And why is he writing books? And why is he teaching at a university? And why is he grading students' papers? And why are they paying $50,000 a year on tuition if everything is meaningless? See, the atheistic worldview is just self-defeating. They deny everything they affirm. They affirm everything they deny. Ecclesiastes shows us the futility of atheism, life under the sun. And then there's Viktor Frankl. I like his book, Man's Search for Meaning. He survived Auschwitz. His wife, his mom, and his dad died in the concentration camp. He worked as a psychologist in the concentration camp. Well, he wrote in his book, striving to find a meaning in one's life is the primary motivational force to man. It is. You can't live without meaning. And he noticed that prisoners in the concentration camp, if they didn't have a simple task to do every day, not meaning with a big M, but just a simple thing to do every day, a reason to get up, a reason to live. Just share a little ration or a piece of a potato with someone. If they didn't have something to do every day, they would lose hope, get sick, and die. They didn't survive the concentration camp. Now, he didn't believe in God. He believed in meaning. If we don't have meaning, you can't live. So this is really the big idea of Ecclesiastes. The preacher is motivated to find meaning and happiness under the sun, but finds no answer here and now without God. There's no meaning, no answer, no happiness if this world is all there is. So that's the introduction. Now let's look at a few of these words from chapters 1 and 2 today. The outline breaks down like this. Nature is meaningless under the sun, verses 4 to 11, chapter 1. Learning is meaningless under the sun, verses 12 to 18. Pleasure is meaningless under the sun, chapter 2, 1 to 11. History is meaningless under the sun, chapter 2, 12 to 16. And work is meaningless under the sun, chapter 2, 17 to 23. Let me just read some of this to you, and you'll get the flavor of what life is like if there's no meaning, if there's no God. First, nature is meaningless under the sun. I want to read verse 4. What do people get for all their hard work under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises, the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run to the sea, but the sea is never full. Then the water returns again to the rivers and flows out again to the sea. Everything is wearisome beyond description. He's describing the four major elements of nature. There seems to be no purpose. Where is it all going? It's all going in circles, spinning, and outlasting all of us. The sun rises and sets, the wind blows, the rivers run. We've seen it all before. What's the meaning of it? What's the purpose of nature? Can we find our purpose in nature? Doesn't seem to be any purpose there. Last Sunday, Cindy and I, we drove up to Buffalo. That's my hometown. And right off of Highway 25, if you blink, you're going to miss where I grew up. All 18 years. That small farm property. There's no buildings there now. The trees and the weeds and the bushes have taken over the whole thing. Cindy says, I didn't even know we drove by it. Nature just took over my home. It doesn't care that I used to live there. It's just all overgrown. It has no memory. It's like, I'm gone. Nature just keeps going forward. What's the meaning of it? It was kind of hurtful to see that. You ever driven by your old hometown or the old farm and these small towns and they're all overgrown, they're gone. There's trees growing in the old buildings. Nature just keeps going on. Doesn't seem to care we were ever here. Well, second, learning is meaningless under the sun. Verse 14. I observed everything going on under the sun, and really, it's all meaningless, like chasing after the wind. What's wrong cannot be made right. What's missing cannot be recovered. I said to myself, look, I'm wiser than any of the kings who ruled in Jerusalem before me. I have greater wisdom and knowledge than any of them. So I set out to learn everything from wisdom to madness and folly. But I learned firsthand that pursuing all this is like chasing the wind. The greater my wisdom, the greater my grief. To increase knowledge only increases sorrow. And that's sort of true, isn't it? The more you know, the harder it is to tolerate people who don't know. And the more you know, the more you wish you didn't know sometimes. You know, Sergeant Schultz was a pretty smart guy. Haven't you ever wanted to be Sergeant Schultz? No. But Solomon, he's the wisest man. He wrote the Song of Solomon as a youth. He wrote and collected the Proverbs in middle age, and he wrote Ecclesiastes as an old man. He's learned a few things. He chased a lot of wind, didn't he? If you know his life. All that learning, without any reference to the fear of the Lord, brought him a lot of pain and grief. I once heard that when an old man dies, it's like a library burns down. All that wisdom, all that life experience. For Solomon, too many years chasing the wind. There's got to be more to learning than just what's under the sun. Well, how about pleasure? Let's try that experiment. Chapter 2, verse 1. I said to myself, come on, let's try pleasure. Let's look for the good things in life. I found out that this too was meaningless. So I said, laughter is silly. What good does it do to seek pleasure? After much thought, I decided to cheer myself with wine. And while still seeking wisdom, I clutched at foolishness. In this way, I tried to experience the only happiness most people find during their brief life in this world. I also tried to find meaning building huge homes for myself. And by planting beautiful vineyards, I made gardens and parks and filled them with all kinds of fruit trees. I built reservoirs to collect the water to irrigate my many flourishing groves. I bought slaves, both men and women, and others were born into my household. I also owned large herds of flocks, more than any of the kings who lived in Jerusalem before me. I collected great sums of silver and gold, the treasure of many kings and provinces. I hired wonderful singers, both men and women. I had many beautiful concubines. I had everything a man could desire. So I became greater than all who had lived in Jerusalem before me, and my wisdom never failed me. Anything I wanted, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. I even found great pleasure in hard work, a reward for all my labors. But as I looked at everything I had worked so hard to accomplish, it was all so meaningless, like chasing after wind. There was nothing really worthwhile anywhere. Solomon, he had it all. He had everything the world could offer, wine and women and wealth and wit and political will, and it was all a bubble that burst. Now as an old man, he looks back on it. It was all a bubble that burst. He climbed the ladder of success and sensuality, and there was nothing there, nothing there that would satisfy under the sun. Well, then next he says, how about history? History has no meaning under the sun. Chapter 2, verse 14. For the wise can see where they're going, but fools walk in the dark. Yet I saw that the wise and the foolish share the same fate. Both will die. So I said to myself, since I will end up in the same place as a fool, what's the value of all my wisdom? Is this all so meaningless? For the wise and the fools, they both die. The wise won't be remembered any longer than the fool. In the days to come, both will be forgotten. And then back in chapter 1, verse 9, history merely repeats itself. It's all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. So here again, he says, because everything is meaningless under the sun, the wise and fools are both forgotten, they're both buried, nothing is ever remembered or learned. And History is just condemned to repeat itself over and over and over again. It never progresses. Isn't it interesting that the progressives today keep wanting to try the same old things, usually socialism, that never works, but no one ever learns. There's no meaning under the sun. It's all been tried and failed before. We learn nothing from history. We just keep repeating the same old, same old. Well, finally, what does he say about work? Chapter 2, verse 17. So I came to hate life because everything done here on the sun is so troubling. Everything's meaningless, like chasing the wind. I came to hate all my work here on earth. For I must leave to others everything I've earned. And who can tell whether my successors will be wise or foolish? Yet they will control everything I've gained by my skill and hard work under the sun. How meaningless. So I gave up in despair, questioning the value of all my hard work in this world. Some people work wisely, with knowledge and skill, and then they must leave the fruit of their efforts to someone who hasn't worked for it. This too is meaningless, a great tragedy. So what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. Even at night, their minds cannot rest. It's all so meaningless. We've heard that story over and over again, haven't we? One generation builds wealth. The next generation squanders it. You work so hard to provide for your family and the next generation, and they waste it. Look at King Solomon. He expanded Israel's borders beyond any other king. The wealth of Israel had never been greater. And then his sons took over. And it divided, declined, and Israel was never the same again. What's the point? Everything's meaningless. Everything's so temporary. Everything's a bubble that bursts. Nature, learning, pleasure, history, and work, it's all meaning if this life is all there is. Are you ready for some good news? Okay. All right. That's why you have to keep reading. Every now and then, there's a few verses in Ecclesiastes that bring us back to life. And here we are, verse 24, chapter 2. The first conclusion in the book. So I decided there's nothing better than to enjoy food and drink and find satisfaction in work. Then I realized that all these pleasures are from the hand of God. Oh, God shows up finally in the book. For who can eat or enjoy anything apart from him? God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to those who please him. But if a sinner becomes wealthy, God takes the wealth away and gives it to those who please him. This too is meaningless, like chasing after the wind. Well, we almost lifted him out of his hole, but he slipped back in there a little bit. But there's good news here. Why? Because God shows up 6 times in these verses. God is mentioned. The whole mood changes. Enjoyment, satisfaction, pleasure, where are these things found? Well, they're not found in the world. They're found beyond the world. That's what he's saying. Verse 24, then I realized that these pleasures are from the hand of God. That changes everything. When his hand reaches down into our world and our hands are up and we receive his gifts, now we know that came from him. And it changes everything. And there's something different about that enjoyment. There's something different about that simple meal. There's something different about that daily bread. There's something different about that pleasure because his hand gave it to us. There's no happiness apart from God, but enjoyment, satisfaction, and pleasure, they come from His hand into ours, and meaning and happiness can return. It sounds like James 1:17. Whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God our Father. Brothers and sisters, these are unhappy times. I want you to open your hands every day and say, God, what do you want to give me today? And thank you for it. And when you give it to me, I know you will because you promise it, help me to enjoy it. Teach me to enjoy the simple things. I think it was, I don't know how many weeks we were in lockdown, and my family went to a little Mexican restaurant up in Mayer. It had outdoor seating. It was a perfect night, Friday night. We hadn't been anywhere in I don't know how many weeks, months. There we were, sitting outside, having Mexican food together. And I just sat there and I said, I feel like I'm in Disney World. This is so fun to be together. And it was good food too, I'll tell you where it is. Good place to go. Those simple things. It was a gift. And I was grateful. I'll close with a story. There's a church in California called Cornerstone Church. That's where Francis Chan was pastor for many years. And there was a funeral there. And one of the pastors there told this story. An older man died. He was in his 80s. And his daughter got up and shared at the funeral about her father. And you know, you learn a lot of things about people at a funeral, things you probably didn't know. So the daughter told this story about her dad. She said, you know, my dad was very successful. He had just about everything you could want. But he didn't have God. He was an atheist his whole life. And I became a Christian. And she didn't say when, but my dad wouldn't have anything to do with it. So he called me up one day. He was getting older. And he had some health issues. And he says, could you come over? I want to talk. Well, sure, I would love to come over and talk. She grabbed her Bible because she knew what she wanted to talk about. She wanted to share Christ with her dad. So they got there and they talked, and she said, Dad, is it okay if I read from the Bible to you? He said, yeah, go ahead. You know what she read? Ecclesiastes 1 and 2. That's not what I would have picked. She got to the end of chapter 2, as we just did, and her dad said, stop. Stop. You don't have to read anymore. I relate to this man. I've chased after the wind my whole life. I'm ready to believe in God. True story. That old man, he could relate to Solomon's theme. So much of his life was meaningless because he was living without God. So maybe we should look at Ecclesiastes through different eyes, through the eyes of those who don't have meaning, who don't have happiness, who don't have a reason, a purpose to live. Now, for us as believers, Monday's still coming. I'm not saying today you're going to be really happy tomorrow. I didn't say that. You're back in the grind. You're going to say, why am I doing this? What's the point? It'll happen. But the daily grind, it's no longer meaningless when we have our hands pointed up. And God gives us those good gifts we need every day, that daily bread, that daily gladness, that will keep us going. And that's what we need to do. Just open your hands every Monday every Tuesday, every Wednesday, and let the Lord feed you with his gladness. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we thank you for these ancient words. And we understand what it's like to chase after things that don't matter. We've done that, even as believers. We turn the gifts of God into gods, and we chase after them, and we shouldn't do that. Father, forgive us for turning your gifts into our gods, these little idols. And God, I pray that each one of us, we would open our hands and just receive from you what we need today for our bodies and our souls and our minds to strengthen us and fill us. This world doesn't bring us any happiness anymore. Without you, God, with us, now that makes Monday very different. So we look forward to tomorrow because we know you will be with us. And with you, we find pleasure. So God, fill this body, fill these families with your happiness, your joy, your truth, and great meaning as they go about their week. And I pray you'd fill them in every way. In Jesus' name, amen.